Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We are Flipper, the Family Law Practitioners Association of Queensland. Family law is a wonderfully rewarding career, but is not without its challenges. Join us as we explore the issues that impact on the practice and well-being of family law practitioners. We hope our episodes will not only inform and inspire you, but encourage you to reach your potential. Enjoy this episode.
Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. I'm Emily Owensworth and I'm joined by my co-host Jack Shaw. Today we are delighted to be speaking with the Honourable Justice Brash from the Federal Circuit and Family Court of Australia Division 1. Hello, Justice Brash.
Hello, how are you both?
We are good, thank you. We'll give you a quick bio of yourself, although you didn't want us to read it out because according to you it's boring. Many would disagree. So prior to her elevation, Justice Brash had a national practice in family law and a Queensland-wide practice in child protection, domestic violence matters and coronial inquests. In addition to usual court work, Her Honour manages the court's critical incident list, is the chair of the Family Law Council for the 2025 to 2028 term, and served as a member of council in its immediate past term. Until her appointment as council chair, Her Honour was a long-term member of the AIJA board. In 2021, Her Honour was president of the Law Council of Australia, having previously served as the inaugural chair of the LCA's Family Violence Task Force and a long-time member of the Family Law Section Executive. Her Honour was also the inaugural chair of the Australian Bar Association's Family Law Committee and chair of its Access to Justice Committee. Justice Brash completed an LLB from QUT with first class honours and then an LLM at New York University as a Fulbright Scholar and NYU Graduate Merit Scholar. Her Honour completed a PhD at UNSW in 2010 and took Silk in 2014. Her Honour remains working on the Queensland Rugby League's Conduct and Appeals Tribunal. So welcome.
Thank you. I told you I sound boring.
I would disagree with that one. Yes.
So in this episode today, we're going to be speaking to Justice Brash about tips and tricks for advocating in the family law courts. The episode was first going to be aimed at young lawyers to assist in our Confidence in the Courtroom workshop, but I know many people will gain a lot of insights and knowledge from this podcast. So I think everyone of every expertise will be tuning in.
Mm-hmm. So for our first question, Judge, we'd just like to ask, for young lawyers who are just starting to appear in court, what's one of the most important things to remember about addressing a judge?
Address it well, knowing your honour, mm-hmm. you'd be surprised. Simple etiquette things like walking, you know, you bow when you come in and out, but it's to actually, as nervous as you might be on the inside, to find a way that you can appear confident. Mm-hmm. Because with confidence, you know, you sound more plausible. But also the most important thing to appear before a judge, you're not your client's mouthpiece. What is your client reasonably seeking? Know your rules. And question, does the judge have jurisdiction and power to make the orders that we're seeking? So, and ultimately, number one, preparation. Know your file. Know your brief.
And then for, I guess following on from that, is there anything that juniors could avoid doing, for instance, at the bar table when making submissions when they're first before?
When I was fairly new to the bar, my senior mentor, I didn't know, snuck in the back of the court and watched. And I fell into the trap, I think, many junior people making. Solicitor, barrister, you're there, you're nervous, but you're excited, you're at court and you speak a million miles under the because you're all there. And Tim North SC, who was my master, he said to me, slow down. And I actually wrote that to the last day I practiced 22 years later. I had the top of my notes, slow down. Because you know the stuff if you're well prepared. You know the story. You got to take the judge on the journey with you too. So slow down was always there.
So and I guess being slow and being able to properly articulate your points is a good first impression. It's what creates that good first impression for junior advocates.
I think so. And the ability, I mean, you would have, I assume lots of listeners, they know about case theory. But I wasn't happy with the matter until I could distill down my case theory being what my client reasonably wanted and why they should get it in 25 words or less. And that would come to me like at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I would have my phone and I would dictate it, or I'd be driving home and I'd, that's it, I've got it. If you can't, if a judge says, what's this about? If you can't tell them what it's about, why you should get the orders you want in 25 words or less, you haven't done enough preparation. If you, I'll give you a good example on that. Many years ago, 2010, I was in a matter that went 78 days.
Wow.
Yep. Wasn't family court, it was a flood inquiry. I acted for the state of Queensland. I was junior barrister with another junior, Jeff Rolls, and a silk, Alan McSporran. 78 days. I got it down. The Wivenhoe Dam worked as it should, full stop. That was the essence of 78 days. So if I could do that in 78 days, I would always, you know, give you an example. Recovery order, what's this about? Your Honour, my client seeks a recovery order of the children who are still with the mother contrary to orders. So what have you done there? You've told the judge what it's about. You've told the judge it's obviously children. You've told the judge they're with the mother, and it's contrary to orders. So a lot of people are going to hear that and think, all right, I'm with you. Because advocacy is all about persuading the judge to do what you want. So, and I would always, just as I'd write slow down, I would always in an interim, when I would always have written down my 25 words or less. I'd have that written down. And at least if it's written down, when the judge says, what's this about? It's there in front of you. The slowdown and also the 25 words or less, what this is about. Not so much a trial because they're a bit more organic, but for interims, you bet I'd have my 25 words or less written down.
So you say prepare, prepare, prepare.
Yep.
And you say your two things were writing slow down and trying to summarise everything in 25 words or less, what you were trying to get across. Is there anything else that you would recommend in terms of assisting people with their preparation?
One of the best advice I got was from, not from Tim North this time, but when I was newly starting out, was everything you say, every question you ask or every submission you make, you should ask yourself before you write it or before you say it or before you ask the question, what submission am I going to make out of this in support of what order? Mm-hmm. And that grounds you into relevance. Mm-hmm. So then if you go, hang on, this is all very interesting, this submission, but it actually doesn't support a single order that I'm seeking or question you ask, then why are you asking it? So I found that invaluable. What's the order the seeking? What submission am I making in support of what order? I mean, of course, you've got to paint a background. You've got to get a bit of information out. But the eye on the prize is, what has this got to do with the reasonable order? And I'm saying that on purpose for, I don't know, third or fourth time, that my client reasonably seeks. And that keeps, I think, at least me, kept me grounded into what's relevant.
Yeah. And then I guess in terms of talking about first impressions to the court, you've said addressing the court as Your Honour. Are there any other etiquette tips that you either see a lack thereof or can provide to junior lawyers when addressing the court?
It's the slow down again. It's the finding the confidence. When I was in the same chambers for all 22 years, and there was a silk when I first came into chambers that I would go and watch. She went on to become a Supreme Court and Court of Appeal judge, retired now, wonderful fellow. I'd watch him. He'd be calm. I'd go to court watching, calm and measured. He'd take the judge on the journey, but he had his hand behind his back and clenching his knuckles so tightly that channeled his energy.
Yeah.
So his energy, and I had my own ways that I would channel my sort of nervous energy as well. And can I pause there and say, I think it's really important to get nervous. I had a rule for myself, the day I walk to court and I'm not nervous is the day I should give up.
Yeah, right.
But you've got to find a technique or a tool that you can challenge your energy for. And if, you know, your hands clenched, one hand clenched behind your back was good enough for a fellow that became a Court of Appeal judge, well, you know, you've got to have that sort of technique.
Absolutely.
But I think you've also got to be afraid. Don't make stuff up. Don't go down. Don't be afraid to say, can I have a moment, please, Your Honour, and collect your thoughts rather than blab something out. I think they're all good tips and hints.
Is there anything you would tell practitioners to avoid in particular that comes to mind?
Being their client's mouthpiece. Mm-hmm. I know legal fees, I know it's expensive, but you actually have to spend some time with the client who wants the unicorn, explaining to them you're not going to get the unicorn, because ultimately you can show them the rules. You say, I'm not your client's mouthpiece, and if I persist in asking for this, his honour will know it's not me, it's really you, and that's not where we want to be. So there's a bit of client management in that. Mm. That takes time, that costs money, I get that. But there's a lot of managing the client in all of this as well, because you don't want to be left with the unicorn instructions. You want the stuff that can be reasonably achieved.
Yeah. So if we're moving on from our first impressions before the court, I think you've given us some amazing examples, and I think that a lot of juniors will be able to take that on board. If we now start talking about preparation and written material.
Hang on, before you go off that, another tip I had, I used to take a folder with me that had had a lot of lines in it, mm-hmm. a number of lines that if I was thrown a curveball of X, it was the same piece of paper, I'd say, and I had it written down there. They became second nature, but I had it written, oh, well, Your Honour, that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is dot, dot, dot. So I had a number of lines there that were, you know, once you get asked a few curly questions, it developed over time, and I would actually take that to court with me for a number of years. And with, you know, some touchstone cases as well, but the lines there for, oh, yes, Your Honour could look at it that way, but another way to look at it is whatever. I've already given you that example, but I had, I don't know, I end up with about 12 of them. And so you get the awful question. I could look down at my piece of paper and go, oh, yes, that one, yes.
That sort of answers one of my questions in regards to preparing. I guess you're not... if you have advice as to not just to preparing your case, but also preparing for any curveball questions you might get from the bench that you're not expecting.
Well, the other curveball too is I would always ask myself, what's the other side going to make of this? Mm-hmm. Because I think, and now I'm talking now as a barrister, I think as barrister land, if I can, I'm not speaking now as a judge, but in barrister land, it often used to be quite amazed that young solicitors, young barristers would get caught up in their client's case.
Yeah.
And they'd believe it, which means they're not seeing what the train coming down the tracks. I would spend more time thinking about, okay, this is my case, I understand, I'm prepared. What are the other side going to make of this? Because you kick an own goal once, then you're alert to not doing it again.
Yeah.
So what's the other side going to make of this? And that goes for drafting affidavits, coro, for, you know, whatever you're saying in court. What's the other side going to make of this? And in interims, my favourite interims was when I could use the other side's material.
Yeah.
Makes fantastic. Yeah. Because, and I mean, if you could do, I didn't have many, but if you could do a whole interim, not referring to your own material, well, there's your interim problem gone, can't find disputes of fact. Your Honour, I'm not going to take you to my client's affidavit on that point. I'm going to take you to paragraph of the other side. That becomes awfully helpful.
So in drafting affidavits, case outlines, are there any do's and don'ts that you would tell practitioners to...
It's again the relevance point. Mm. What has this got to do with? I mean, if you can't give a background in a paragraph or two, it's a parenting matter, Your Honour, where both parties, well, the father seeks equal time and the mother says no time, there are allegations of sexual abuse, full stop. Then, you know, what is the drafting? Every paragraph in an affidavit, put aside the background stuff, should be supporting an order or a submission that's going to, you know, in support of an order or against an order. So again, that relevance point, where am I going with this? What's the point of it? Oh, it's a lovely story. And well, no, it might be. And you also need to learn again to manage clients that I know you want to tell His Honour or Her Honour about he cheated on you in 1983, but, you know, right now... the judge is interested, will be interested in X. And, you know, most cases come down to two or three issues. They really do. Two or three disputes. And, you know, and that's the stuff you need to be focusing on.
Yeah. Aside from keeping out any irrelevant material, is there any mistakes that you see often that you wish people would avoid?
verbiage. Less is more.
Yeah.
And think about the human inclination. If you get, anyone gets a document that's 90 pages long, call it an outline, call it submissions, whatever, and you get one that's 5 pages long, what's your natural inclination be to engage with? It's the five page one. I actually, one of my trial directions is case outline no more than 5 pages. Orders get attached separately, the minute of order separately. But that's because, like, don't give me War and Peace. And I used to get amazed at times when I was at the bar, when the other side did the War and Peace, it inevitably highlighted for me the failings in their own case, their thoughts about the failings in my case, which then meant I knew what I had to fix up. So, short and sweet.
Short and sweet is the way to go. So, I guess... that sort of leads into where I want to take this now in regards to what is too much when drafting material. I think, you know, you want to tell the story and you want to, you know, explain the story in affidavits and case outlines, but how do you know where the line is?
Well, every matter turns on its own facts and circumstances, doesn't it? But if you keep relevance as your touchstone, yeah. What am I thinking about? What are we seeking to achieve? I never understood at the bar why someone would want what used to be equal shared parental responsibility and then devote 100 pages to how awful the other side was. You know, don't get it. Yeah. Don't get it. And how much is too much? Probably more a question of... what do I need to say to refute what the other side want to get what we want? So if you keep focused on the outcome and you're drafting to a reasonable outcome, I think that's helpful.
Yeah. And I guess at the end of the day, while we have the rules that, you know, for interim hearings and the like, it's 10 pages, you don't need to use the entirety of the 10 pages.
You don't.
Get your point across and that's it.
Get your point. Get your, whatever the factual dispute is. And, you know, I don't know why I get, when I was a barrister, you'd get pages and pages on affidavits for disputes that actually aren't justiciable controversies. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to keep in mind, you know, what dispute am I actually asking the judge to solve, and is it a justiciable controversy? You tell me what principle or section of the Act or authority is going to help me decide, do the children go back at 5 or 5.30? Mm-hmm. Now, I know you've got to make the decision, but that's actually not a justiciable controversy. And by that, I mean, what is the authority, the principle or the section of the Act that's going to be engaged? And also, don't ask for orders that are beyond power.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I guess, something you'd see quite regularly.
I will make no comment, Jack, about what I see in this job, but certainly as a barrister, I saw it.
And so going into, I guess, this confidence in the courtroom is set up to be run as an interim hearing.
Yep.
What are some key tips for preparing, i.e. written material, going into that? I.e. would you suggest it's good to prepare some consent orders or some orders that you can hand up to assist the court?
Yeah, well... but they should be there already. They should either be there attached to the case outline, mm-hmm. if that's been ordered, or it's your moving document. Mm-hmm. It's your application and proceeding orders. If something's, but can I tell you what, the less bits of paper, the better. Mm-hmm. You want the judge to be focusing on this bit of, hang on, is it this order or these orders? Hang on, well, you had orders in your application and then you had different in your out and out. Well, I'm confused. That's not where you want to be. The trick, though, is I think standing behind the lectern, I can't think of a time I didn't have an outline. I found that useful, particularly in busy lists where if the judge isn't able to make a decision, what are they going to go to more likely than not first when they go back to chambers? Your outline. Not if it's 900 pages long, but if it's shortened to the point. But I would always, in submissions, whether it was a trial or whether it was interim, yeah, I'd have my outline, but then I'd have my own handwritten 5 or 6 dot points as to the path I wanted to follow on. Mm-hmm. You've also practically then got to have a way, if the judge takes you off on path A, that's fine. And I'd actually, anyone listening to this that used to brief me would know at the bar table I would have about 12 different coloured pens. There was no particular rhyme nor reason the colour, but once I started writing in one colour, then if I got diverted off to a topic, I would actually with another colour draw a line So I knew where I had to come back to on my plan.
Yeah.
But on that, when a judge asks a question, please answer it. There's a reason they're asking, and that's a great opportunity for you to engage.
Yeah.
And if the point's against you, don't say, oh, I'll get back to that. Deal with it. Deal with it then when the judges ask the question. And go, yeah, that's one way, as I've said, one way you can look at another, but let me take you to this or let me take you to that. But I always, no matter, I hate to think how many interims I did, but I would have my own plan and the issues that I felt I needed, you know, only be five or six, usually five or six points I felt I needed to make. And then having them there in my own hieroglyphics, my atrocious handwriting, I had the confidence and I knew where I had to come back to.
Well, I suppose that's a good tip for practitioners, because it's common for judges to want to interrupt and ask a question, but they don't want to lose their train of thought and need to come back to it. So that's a good tip. It was actually one of our questions, what should they do if they get interrupted by a judge? So that's a helpful.
Well, answer the question and have the confidence to say, Your Honour, I need to think about that. Give me a second. Now, I think a question like that should be dealt with respect. Yeah, sure. Think about it. But I would hope that's not basic things like, well, what do you say about section 60CC2A? I'd be a little concerned if someone said, let me have a moment to think about that. But, you know, but if it was truly a curly and a left ball, give me a moment to think about it. And that question should be dealt with respect.
So walking through your submissions and taking your time to think and respond to the question where appropriate.
Yep.
So that sort of leads into our next question. What advice would you give junior advocates on how best to manage their time at the bar table? So you said you've previously had several colours of pens to circle and scribble and come back to. Are there any other key points that you would provide advice on?
I think the less said the better, because you know the phrase, snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yes.
And there's also in cross-examination the one question too many concept as well. And I think, what's his name, Justice Lee had a magnificent phrase, you know, you escaped the lion's den, but you went back to get your hat or something like that. Now, I think if you've made your point, you move on, because chances are you keep talking, you might undo all the good work and you might, oh, I didn't think about that, then what about? So if you've made your point, you move on to the next point. You don't over-egg the pudding.
Yeah.
What's the line between being persuasive and overly combative? When
I don't think aggression is advocacy. I think aggression. Occasionally, you've got to be firm with it, particularly in cross-examination. But I used to give this speech for the junior bar when I was a barrister called Advocacy: The Art of Seduction. And you want to take the judge from here, you know, from point A to point B to points, and Your Honour, and Your Honour, and Your Honour, Your Honour. And you're making it just absolutely irresistible for the judge. And never say this case is complicated. It might be, but your job is to bring it down to, if I can do 78 days and come up with a case theory of, you know, very few words. But you actually want to take the judge or the witness on a journey. I do not think aggression is advocacy. I think a lot of the letters that are written, and I'm talking now as when I was a barrister, the incendiary devices are just appalling, particularly when the party's own conduct in parenting matters and their communications are being looked at. I do not think aggression is advocacy. Not to confuse that with being firm, if you have to, but with a witness. I don't think there's anything... I don't think combat is good. You catch more flies with honey.
Absolutely. And I think, I guess, for junior practitioners being before a judge who's much senior than them and getting questions back and wanting to fall on their sword straight away, how should a junior react in that situation, and how should they know when enough is enough to be rebutting back to the bench?
Well, if you're asked a question, you answer the question. Yep. If you don't know the answer, you don't waffle on, because, you know, that's not going to be helpful. You say, I don't need to think about that, Your Honour. I need to think about that. can you give me a moment or can we return to it? And the judge said, oh, no, I'll give you a moment to think about it, or look, we can come back to that, whatever. I think it's not so much pushing back again, because if you liken it to seduction, mm-hmm. you're not wanting to get a judge's backup. You're wanting to get the judge going on the same train track that you're reasonably going on. But, you know, sometimes you do have to be firm, but you do it politely mm-hmm. and you do it with courtesy. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any place for barristers or even solicitors to be bickering at each other at the bar table. Mm-hmm. That's not the kind of... I don't consider any of that to be advocacy.
So in terms of not being aggressive then, and you get the same result by, you know, being seductive, using your words, is there any other behaviours that you see that undermine someone's advocacy?
Well, I'll talk as when I was a barrister. If you're having a chat with a witness, or you're being, you know, chat, and you'd agree with me. Now, most witnesses, their only knowledge of court is what they've seen on TV, and it's American, and they think, ah, sidebar, Your Honour, and it's all aggressive and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But, and it actually, it really wrong-foots witnesses yeah. when, oh, well, you'd agree with me, wouldn't you? And human nature is to agree. You'd agree with me, wouldn't you? You'd agree with me, wouldn't you? You'd agree with me. And one way to, you know, and you talk and you have a conversation. You can do the same with the bench as well. But if you've started off aggressive and hot to trot with a witness, if you actually need to be firm, you've got nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that if I was having a chat with a witness, or and then I had to not raise my voice but say, stop it, answer the question, people would take note, because you've actually completely changed the mode and the tone. And with the court, there's not much point getting combative with the judge. There's not much point, you know, pushing back in a non-productive way. That's where you might look at your lines that you've got and you go, yes, Your Honour. Or Your Honour might want to look at it this way, blah, 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 and try and steer off on another journey.
Mm. And then, so I guess from your experience at the bar, well, I'll take you back to that. what would you say is appropriate behaviour or courtesy or professionalism between two practitioners in court?
Take no quarters in court, but the ability, each of you just understanding you're doing a job. Mm-hmm. And you could just as easily be briefed for the horrible parent tomorrow mm-hmm. as the better parent today. The roles could just as easily be reversed. I don't think there's any position for, I'm going to win my case. You know, that you know, sort of lording it over you, you know, another opponent. That just used to spur me on. Instead of giving up at 2 a.m, I'd go the extra yard because I know there's a case on this somewhere, and it would be motivation for me. I don't think there's any place for, I used to love it. It didn't happen to me, obviously, when I was a senior. I would love it when senior solicitors or more senior barristers would, outside of court, tell me all the problems with my case, because I'd go, good, okay, now
tell
I know.
Tell me more, please.
Yeah. Tell me more. Good, terrific. But I think... No, I had a lovely group of friends, and still do, but I can't see them now much anymore, at the bar. And we would, when I say fight fiercely, I don't mean combatively, but no quarter would be drawn. Mm-hmm. But then we'd walk outside, yeah, how are the kids? Oh, yeah, good. Because you know? We each understood this is a job.
Yeah. You put your barrister hat on inside the courtroom.
Well, or your solicitor hat on, yeah. or and you don't get enmeshed with your client. Yeah, your advocate hat. And you don't, I didn't, you know, you believe your clients when you've got a when it makes sense, or you've got a document mm-hmm. to prove it. And the moment you start, oh, yes, my client is right and yours is wrong, you're losing objectivity.
Yeah. And you're starting to, I guess, side with your client and...
And you're not seeing...
Get that tunnel vision that you were talking about before.
And you don't see the oh... And, you know, the first time clients see there's a different view to their worldview and their solicitor's worldview is when they get cross-examined. Mm. I don't think that's doing your job.
And before you said about being a mouthpiece for your client, and you shouldn't be a mouthpiece, as a junior lawyer, when should you know where the line is to not being that mouthpiece?
I used the word unicorn before. I think if you're... I mean, it's in the bar rules, it's in the solicitor conduct rules. You have to exercise your view independently. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Don't forget our first duties are to the court. Your second duty is to your client. So think about my unicorn example before. If what the client wants is a unicorn, well, you advocating for the unicorn, that's being a mouthpiece. Mm-hmm. That's when you've got to work with the client. Or, you know, if it's a 102 and A, or you've only for money reasons just met your client, you've got to state it, Your Honour, my client's position is X, but Your Honour, the highest the evidence goes on that is Y. Now that sends a message, I'm not asking for the unicorn, my client wants it, but I accept I can't be doing that. So it's why I've used the word several times in this, what your client reasonably wants.
Yeah.
And so I think if what your client reasonably wants, you're advocating your heart out for, that's fine. You're not being a mouthpiece, but it's when you want the gold bullion under the rainbow with a unicorn on top, you're probably...
George, I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, well, exactly. Silly me, yes.
Do you have any advice to junior lawyers where their client is saying, push harder, but the judge has already given a preliminary view or said that's not a tree worth barking up at, but you go outside, you've been stood down, your client saying, I want you to push harder on that, I want you to go for it. Do you have any advice to give a junior lawyer in that?
Probably hard. I got to a point though where I'd say, fine, if you want to run that, do it yourself, I'll leave now. Solicitors would write you notes going, be more aggressive. Or I actually sat down in the full court once, not in the Brisbane Registry, that's how old it was, the full court. I sat down, my solicitor, and the three judges on the bench were getting very annoyed with her, you know, talking very loudly. I sat down and said, do it yourself. Now, granted, and then once the full court handed down their decision, I got a phone call from each of them going, thank you. That was, I'm not sure if I was a silk then, but I acknowledge that babies can't, you know, baby barristers, junior solicitors can't do that. But you need to learn techniques about, you know, it's not actually American TV. Yeah. This judge doesn't like aggression, the best thing. So it's about client management and expectation. You know, some matters, I would bring clients over with my solicitor to court to watch so they could get out of their head that, A lot of what goes on in the courts is, in fact, very dull, very mundane. Mm-hmm. It's not like the six, you know, law and order and the 55-minute mark. The witness goes, yes, you've got me. You know, it's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you bring clients over so they actually understand what court is, and it's a pretty, you know, it's hardly worth a television show, put it that way.
Yeah, as much as TV likes to show it is.
Yes, that's right.
You have said that there have been other lawyers on other sides that say these are all the holes in your case. When they do it to junior lawyers, some of them can be quite aggressive.
Yeah.
What are your tips for that?
Look, I'm so old. I go back to the days of when the Supreme Court was further up George Street than it is now. And, you know, there's another rat goes by. You know, it was just needed to be pulled down. And I remember then a barrister who doesn't need to be named. He stood over me and was literally, you're going to lose because of this, 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 this and this. And I'm mentally thinking, okay, do I need to check that out? But I know, knowing full well he was trying to intimidate me, And I was sitting down. He was standing over me, pointing. I just looked at him and I had the courage to say to him, when you can be polite to me, please come back and talk, and walked off. Silly thing about that was I was for the party with the money. And so he had to come and talk to me and was polite, and we actually ended up becoming friends. But you know, no one should take that, and I would hope that juniors, they should have the confidence to not put up with that stuff and to say, please come back and talk to me. Or, you know, whatever your own version is, but that's what I said to that person.
Well, it does feed into that, just be respectful back, I think.
Yeah.
Have confidence to say, I'm not going to talk to you until you're ready to talk to me respectfully.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And in the meantime, mental note of all the things they said was wrong is that, no, that's crap, that's crap. Oh, shivers, better. Mm.
So if we're talking about being on our feet in court and oral advocacy, what are some tips that juniors can either do now or start doing that's going to make them a better advocate when on their feet?
I think, well, preparation is important. I tell you other things I used to, I'd have slowed down. Really, the first page of my notes really was, and I used to, my cross-examination notes, the header of each page, I didn't write questions out, but I had dot points, had slow down. Have accessible, when do they get married? When do they get divorced? What are the names of the children? What are their ages of birth? Because that can really, I've seen so many people when I was at the bar, simple question, you've got so caught up in the facts of the matter or the dispute. When you say, how old are the children again? If you got it there. So simple things like that. I think the trick to having, or confidence is something that grows. You never want to grow it so much that you're becoming cocky. That's not helpful. But if you've got like an interim hearing, your five key points written down, if you've got the names of everybody, if you've got, you know, in my case, slow down, written very big, if you've got that written there in front of you, if you, the judge has taken you off on a journey and you've highlighted with your different coloured pen or whatever technique you use, this is where I've got to come back to. It's all about, I think anyway, it's all about giving yourself enough crutches, essentially, that you can fall back on, or you can look down, or here's, you know, here are the lines that I've written, yep, that one works well, you know, and you can say that. So if you're thinking about, and you also need to think about, what are the tough questions that I might get asked? You need to have addressed that. They'd be my wake up at 2 a.m. What if the judge asks this? And I'd and I'd pace, and I would make a note of myself for that question. And so if you've not just got your client's affidavit in front of you, but you've got a game plan and the important stuff, then that should help. Because I think there would be, if you couldn't answer a basic question because you freeze, what are the children's names, and because you've been, you know, working on the dispute too much, that's got to knock your confidence. Yeah. You've got to feel like a gooseberry if you can't answer that. If you've got it all written down, you've got it.
Yeah. Cheat sheet.
Yep.
And then I guess...
Funny you call it that. That's what I would call it. Yeah, it was my cheat sheet.
Yeah, yep. I typically have one, to be honest. So.
My cheat sheet. And there it was, and I didn't have to try and remember that stuff or look like, you know, flipping through the case outline to go, well, where's the children's names again?
Even just the net property pool.
Yeah.
Little things like that I find really helpful. What's your client's income? If someone's trying to make a cost application, I just have it on one sheet.
Yep. What are the critical things that are likely to come up in this, and what are the basics? And the nice thing of having your cheat sheet that even includes when they got married, when they got divorced, or when they separated, or, you know, the ages of the children, the ages, you don't have to try and remember that stuff.
No.
Then that then the brain then can be devoted to the important stuff as opposed to trying to memorize stuff you can just write in your cheat sheet.
I think you learn from your mistakes, because
that's how I
was in court and the judge said, and what did your client earn per year? And I turned around to him because I didn't know it. And so ever since then, I've made sure it's always on my cheat sheet with all the other key points.
Yep. And you know, if you've got property, what are the suburbs of the property? You know, the suburbs of the property, instead of trying to remember, oh, God, is it Woolowin or Warner? Is it, oh, is it, you know, if you've got that basic stuff written down, then your brain power isn't being devoted to that. If asked, you then confidently, word we used before, you go, oh, Your Honour, you know, the twins were born in, you know, 2022 in April.
And I guess it's they're simple questions to get right to then boost your confidence with those more difficult ones. Or those curveballs that you can go to your list and say,
yeah, there we go.
I'll use that.
But I think it's more than helping you with your confidence. I think it also helps not eroding your confidence. Because I think if you can't answer because you've sort of lost sight of the basics, that's got to feel really bad.
Mm.
I didn't know the name of the kids.
Yeah.
I did. So if you got it, so I think it works both ways. It helps you improve your confidence because you know the answers, but it's also the converse, that you don't suffer a blow to your confidence because you've got the basics written down in front of you.
Yeah. And I think we might have already touched on this, but... talking about what's going to develop a junior advocate when on their feet, what are some things that you've seen that juniors fall into quite easily that are simple mistakes, i.e. what we've just said about not knowing children's names and the like? Are there any other things that you've seen?
And that are easy to fix that you, or any advice you'd give on how to fix them easily?
The Well, your cheat sheets, etc., all of that. I just had a brilliant thought when you were asking that, Jack, and I've now completely forgotten.
Sorry.
Well, it can't have been that brilliant. Can't have been that brilliant. You know, if you're going to go and watch a barrister, make sure it's a good barrister. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go and watch a solicitor, make sure it's one that's on top of their game. And that might mean you have to ask a few questions. That wasn't my brilliant idea, mind you, but if I think of it again, I'll come back to it.
Just cut in straight away.
This day, we don't have first returns that are now in court. It's all via Teams online. And so the ability to go and sit in the back of court, particularly if you're a busy junior or you know have a lot of work, you don't get to see good advocacy very often. Are there any other resources that you could point people to? The answer might be no, but I'm just asking. Other than
I don't know. I think the answer is no, but I will tell you, when I studied at New York University, I was sitting some bar exams, and the best tip I got, we mentioned it before, was when you're studying evidence, watch Law and Order. They use the real cases.
At least they use something that's real. Yeah.
caught nothing like that. But they that case, and it stood for a proposition, and I checked a few out and went, oh, that's cool. I can study evidence.
So watch Law and Order for the cases, but don't listen to them when they say sidebar.
Exactly.
So what's one do and don't then that come to mind that you could give to to all practitioners, I should say,
On courtroom advocacy.
Yeah. One do, one don't, if we could take one takeaway from this of each.
Don't ask for the sky unless you've got the cards up your sleeve and the court's got jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. Do prepare and be afraid not to ask colleagues questions. Mm-hmm. You actually want you want to have asked and got the answer from trusted colleagues as to what might actually have been a stupid idea than from the bench.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So obviously confidence in the courtroom is set up. There's the first return, and then we've got the interim hearing. When you were at the bar, entering into an interim hearing, what are a couple of things that juniors should do to either prepare or bring with them to an interim hearing to best support their advocacy?
Well, if they've done an outline, enough copies of that for the judge, have a working copy for the judge as well if you can. Have your dot points. What are the points I really need to get across here? Have a think as well about, have you got to get in first on something? Mm-hmm. Your client's been a shocker. Own it. Get in first. Don't let the other side have the oxygen on it. Mm-hmm. Bit harder if you're for the respondent, obviously, but, you know. You will at times see barristers, a bit of argy-bargy with barristers going on about the respondent announcing their appearance second and then staying on their feet.
Yes.
That is code for they want to get in first.
Yeah. Well, look, we've had a really good chat so far. And those questions were the ones that we had prepared for the Confidence in the Courtroom workshop and talking about advocacy. So the next few questions are really bonus questions for you and about you. So do you remember your very first court appearance, and what stands out about that for you?
It's just shocking. I was just like, well, my very first...
You are human. Yeah, good.
My very first court appearance actually was my senior master, Tim North, who I mentioned, day two, came into my chambers and said, put your robes on, you're coming to the full court with me. So that was a bit of, that was fun. But my first stand on my own, oh my God, I'm mortified. So, and I was actually against a person who is now a judge of this court. He shall remain nameless.
Say less.
And so, and I remember it was before a senior judicial registrar, and I'd done my written submissions, and my opponent was saying, and it was schooling. It was 2000 because the decision about schooling had just come out, and re-children's school, and I was across it, and I was so excited. And my opponent's saying to me very nicely, "You haven't read your material." I haven't got a clue what he's talking about. And so I'm clutching my submissions closer and closer to my chest whilst he's going, "You've got to read your material." And I'm going, "Oh." Well, I came to the bar. I hadn't been a solicitor beforehand, so I hadn't. So, and I, things like that weren't taught at the bar practice course. So I'm clutching my submission, I don't know what he's talking about. And my solicitor's trying to write me notes and I'm just absolutely mortified. Then the SJR can see what's going on. He's, how about you hand up your submissions to me? Oh, good. And then he hands up, then he starts smelling the submissions. I'd been holding them against my chest. He said, did you spray these with perfume to try and make me sweeter or something? And I just wanted to die. I don't know what they mean by read my material. And now that, because I'd been holding them so close, I hastened to add I had a suit on, mind you, but I am just so more, I don't know what he's meaning. And then he's smelling, did he spray perfume? Oh, for God's sake.
It sounds like a Legally Blonde moment when she hands up her resume that was on pink paper and lavender scented.
Well, years later, I handed up some submissions in a really serious matter, and I was standing up. It was ICL. We were wondering in a German and something. And remember the submission, Your Honour, I've got, this is a 5-day trial and I've got 5 reasons for why you'll grant the adjournment. I just thought that was cute, 5 days, 5 reasons. But I'd handed up the submissions and the judge is reading them and I'm following along. If judge is reading submissions, you follow along, turn it. And he starts smiling and I'm thinking, what can he possibly be smiling about? This is an awful man. Then he held the submissions up and the one copy of the submissions that I handed up happened to be the one of my daughters had used for children's drawings. He held them up and said, do this at home, did we, Dr. Brash? I'm so sorry. Yes, but my first ever appearance on my own 2 feet, I was ready to go back to chambers, pack up and give up. But, you know, I decided to push on. And it seems to have turned out okay for me.
Yes, okay.
So then moving on to your career as a barrister, what was the most valuable lesson about advocacy that you learned there?
The job's a privilege. Mm-hmm. We learn a humility. Humility in the job is a privilege. I mean, on the advocacy side, the best tip I ever got is what I've already told you. What is the point of this question or this submission? What order does it lead to? That helps ground you in relevance or what actually matters, i.e. relevance. But I think working in family law, domestic violence, child protection, we see people who are really vulnerable, but we also learn, and often in very short time, really intimate things about them. And I think, and we all have a role to play as well in trying to make children's lives a little less worse or a little better. Mm-hmm. But I think to understand the job is, oh, look at me, I'm a lawyer. No, I think it's a job that requires humility and an understanding what we do is a privilege.
Mm. Absolutely. One final question, I think, before we let you go. And I think this entire podcast has been an invaluable experience for people listening because there's been so much amazing advice you've been able to
even
give.
If I've now forgotten my stunning point that I was going to raise before, whatever.
If you remember it, just let us know. We'll back in. Yeah. Back in. But, and this obviously can be from your view when you're at the bar, but if there's one thing that a lawyer can do to make the job of a judge easier, or one thing they can do to be more helpful, what is that?
I'm not saying this is complicated, Your Honour. Mm-hmm. Have a structure, mm-hmm. have a logical flow that takes the judge on the journey. Mm-hmm. And do it slowly. Give the judge enough time to make notes. Or if you ask a judge as part of that journey, if you ask them to look at a paragraph in an affidavit, give them time to look at the paragraph in the affidavit. But take them on a journey that has been well thought out, well crafted, and you've got all your cheat sheets with you. Mm-hmm. So if you ask a question and you've got your, you know, lines, if you get thrown a curveball, you've got your technique to come back to your journey. To take them on a journey that also you have considered first principles.
Mm-hmm.
Is there power to do this? Is there jurisdiction to do it? Is this the unicorn, or is this actually stuff that is founded in evidence? And I tell you what, if you say to it, I think it's incredibly powerful if somebody says, my client wants, but you're on it, let me take you to the evidence and what that might support.
Mm-hmm.
A well-crafted journey, mm-hmm. that would be the thing to do.
So I guess going back to the hare and tortoise situation, be the tortoise, not the hare. It's not a running race, it's a journey.
It's a journey.
Yeah.
And I also think it's not just looking, what does my client want now? What do they want? What's their final position?
Mm-hmm.
And how does this actually assist them in getting there? What's the other side going to make of it? How could this be used, this application, proceeding, whatever, how could that be used against them mm-hmm. down the track? So never losing, I suppose that all comes down to never losing focus on what the other side might make of it or how the judge might see it. And I think there's a real, again, barrister land time, a real assumption the judge will see it my client's way.
Mm.
Not necessarily. So if you're keeping your eyes on what do we reasonably want, what's the journey to get there, what's the other side going to make of it, not just now but at trial, and will the judge necessarily see it my way? And you've got to work on the basis the answer to that might be no. Because you're going to come a cropper if the judge doesn't see it that way, and the first time you've ever thought about that is when you're standing on your feet. You asked about confidence before. That's one of those confidence zapping moments. And that's also when the client might be asking you some questions about, why didn't you think about that earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Bad.
Yeah.
I know we've said one last question already. I could ask so many more questions, to be honest. Thank you so much for your time. But I do have a question, not about advocacy, but about your career as a whole. I mean, there's positives, negatives, highs and lows. Is there a motto that you've lived by or a mantra that's gotten you through your career so far?
Pick your fights.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Pick your fights, and that applies in everything.
Mm-hmm.
That applies with your own children. Really, do you need to? That applies with your partner. Really, do you need to? I often say that when people have consent orders, pick your fights.
Mm-hmm.
And that covers everything. That is this, you know, an application and proceeding we really need to bring? Or am I just being a clever lawyer? Is this an argument my client really needs to have?
Mm.
Pick your fights.
Mm.
And that's not me saying that. I was given advice when I started at the bar. I was very lucky to get work at the newly created, as was then, Guardian Administration Tribunal. And I was also, I was then pregnant. And the fabulous Anne Lyons, who was president of the tribunal, said, pregnant. Can I give you one bit of advice? And I said, I'd love it. She said, learn to pick your fights.
Wow.
Lovely.
She was talking about parenting, but I think that applies. I think that applies just generally. And the other thing I think, and I'm going back to my law counsel days, I think it's important that we all ask each other, are you okay? And mm-hmm. we have the courage to say
today's
no.
Are you okay?
It is actually.
Fighting,
it is. It is. But I think we should be asked, are you okay? And pick your fights.
Mm-hmm.
So that was two. You asked for one, but there's two.
I know.
We're happy with two. That's fine.
Well, thank you so much, Justice Brash, for your time today. What a privilege and an honour to interview you, honestly. I know so many people are going to love this episode. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. Lovely to see you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. We confirm that the information we discussed today was just that, information for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not specific advice. If something discussed has you considering whether you should take steps, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or other advice. Please reach out to Flipper if there's another topic you'd like explored, and if you know someone who might benefit from the show, remember to tell them about it. Thank you for listening.